Okay, bonsoir, good evening. My name is Lawrence Mysak. I've been involved for many years, off and on, in organizing this cutting-edge lecture series. This is the 10th year, so it's been quite a remarkable run of really very lovely lectures by many different colleagues and friends from McGill and elsewhere. This lecture series is supported by our dean-level administration these last few years, the Dean of Science, Martin Grant, the Dean of Arts, Dean of Medicine, and Agricultural and Environmental Sciences. And also the last couple of years, the CAMBAM, the Center for Applied Mathematics and Medicine and Biology, has also been sponsors. And as you all know, the support goes not only for renting the room, security, but also to have a reception after, so the speaker can be engaged with you and answer further questions which are not asked at this symposium itself. Well, today we're very fortunate to have Tracy Webb speaking with us. I've never met her before. This is the first time we've met. And I can see the energy in her level as she studies the energy and the formation of very early galaxies. She's an observational astrophysicist, and she looks at particular galaxies many billions of years ago. I'm sure she'll tell you exactly when. She looks at data, so she is an observational person, and this data that she collects is light measurements, and because of the dust that she encounters in the universe, she has to use what's called submillimeter length measurements, and she'll tell you more about those, I'm sure. But she's particularly interested in the processes that are involved in the formation and the evolution of the galaxies. Tracy did her first degree, bachelor's degree from University of Toronto. She went to McMaster's for a master's degree and then returned for her PhD at the University of Toronto. She spent 3 years at the University of Leiden in the Netherlands, and she joined the faculty here in the year 2006.
That's right.
And is still a member of the physics department, and glad to see one member of the physics department here supporting her in this lecture. The lecture should be roughly 45 to 50 minutes, the usual style, and we'll, of course, have a good time for questions afterwards. So please welcome Dr. Tracy Webb.
Thank you very much for the lovely introduction, and you've introduced my talk quite well. Also, so I will be talking, I probably won't talk very much about the one wavelength of light that I spend a lot of my time researching with, which is submillimeter. I'm going to try and focus less on the techniques and more on the objects, which are galaxies. So I want to tell you tonight about the formation and evolution of galaxies in the larger context of structure formation in the universe. So I'm going to frame it in the context of what we call large-scale structure formation, and I'll explain what I mean by that. But I've called it witnessing the formation and evolution of galaxies for a very specific reason, which I think will become clear, well, it will become clear as I give the lecture, and that is namely that we really can witness how galaxies formed and how they evolved throughout cosmic time, and I'll show you how that's done during the talk. This background image, I'm not going to say much about it right now. It's actually one of my own images that I've taken with an optical telescope. So the dots that you see here are largely what you would see if you had very powerful eyes. There's some additional information on here, such as these blue hazes, as well as this line here, this circle. And I'll come back to that later, because I'm going to talk about what's in this field close to the end of the lecture. I wanted to begin with just a little synopsis, an outline of what I'm going to talk about, just so you know where we're going. The formation and evolution of galaxies is an absolutely huge field. Almost every single slide I show you could be its own talk. So I'm going to just be picking and choosing some of the things that I think are most interesting, or things that I think that you will find interesting and would like to remember about the formation and evolution of galaxies. I'm going to start with just an introduction to our present-day universe, because this is really what is motivating the work that I do and the work that many people do. We want to understand how all of the structure, everything that we see around us in the universe today, formed. So this is our starting point, what we call the present day or the local universe. I'm then going to talk very briefly about the standard model of structure formation. This is not something that I do myself. This is the context within which I actually study the formation and evolution of galaxies, and it's fairly well established, and there have been previous cutting-edge lectures on this topic. So I'm going to outline that, and then we're going to zero in on the complications in the formation and evolution of galaxies themselves. And then I'm going to talk about, along with this, what I call the cutting edge at McGill. I'm just going to give you a few snapshots of the kinds of research that we do within my group at McGill to answer some of these questions. And that's where this background image is going to come in. So let's begin by setting the scale, as I call it, because we're really talking about large-scale structure. And this large-scale structure, although very large, does actually occur on many different scales in the universe. And so I want to start with that. And again, as I said, really show you what we're trying to explain. This is a really beautiful image. It's a fisheye image taken from a mountain in Chile, which shows the night sky. You may or may not recognize this. If you've ever been somewhere extremely dark, you will recognize that this is the Milky Way galaxy. You can see this nicely if you go, you can see it from Montreal if you go outside of the city, mostly in the summertime. You'll see this arc which stretches across the sky and looks like this hazy cloud with these dark strips through it. This is our galaxy. And really, this is the universe. What we can see here are lots of stars lots of stars within our own galaxy, so the local universe, which is really close to us. But this night sky is our gateway to the entire universe. And so we're trying to explain everything that we see above us and below us, of course, in the southern hemisphere, in the night sky. And so you can see a variety of structure in this image, and I'm going to go through some of it. I've already pointed out the Milky Way, which is this band here, and I'll explain what that is in a second if you're unfamiliar with it. This little dot right up here is actually the planet Jupiter. It's just kind of stretched out in the image. Everything that you see here is the combined light from billions of individual stars, just like our own sun. And then this stuff that you see here, the dark areas, these are actually dust lanes. So this is this dusty soot, which is something that I study quite a bit. And it behaves like a screen in front of the background stars and actually blocks the light. But you can see a lot of structure in this image, right? You can see something. You can see stars, you can see planets, you can even see a galaxy. And the point is, even from here on Earth, we can see that the universe is clumpy. And that's something that we can see around us today. I mean, the matter in this room is clumpy. You and I are very overdense regions of the universe, and the universe itself is mostly empty space. I'm not really going to be talking about the very small scale structure, which is people and planets and solar systems and even stars. I'm really going to be starting at the bottom of what we call large scale structure, which are galaxies. And galaxies are what I know and love and what I seek to understand every day from 9 to 5. I like to call these either island universes in themselves or islands within the universe. They are, as you probably know, collections of billions, tens of billions of stars, just like our own sun. They're held together by their own mutual gravity, and they come in many, many different shapes. This, in particular, is the nearest galaxy to us, called the Andromeda Galaxy, which you can actually see again from Montreal just with binoculars or a small telescope, usually in the summertime. And this is a beautiful image of it where you can see the entire galaxy. So all of this white stuff that you see here, that's the combined light from the billions of stars within this galaxy. If you were to look at this galaxy, we're sort of seeing it edge on. If you were to look at it from the top down, it would look something like this. And the reason I'm showing you the Andromeda Galaxy is because it actually looks remarkably like our own Milky Way galaxy. So that's the galaxy that I showed you in the previous image. This is what the Milky Way galaxy would look like from the top down. It's a disk. So if we turn it on its side, it looks like a disk. It has a very bright, massive core here. Again, this is billions of stars. And then this spiral structure. We live about here. So we live about two-thirds of the way out in one of the rather small spiral arms. So these are galaxies. This is just one example of a kind of galaxy or a shape of galaxy called a spiral galaxy. As I said, they come in many different shapes. And something I'm not going to talk about tonight is the quest to understand these different shapes, which is something else that we do here at McGill, understand the spiral structure here. But again, that's another lecture in itself. So these are the building blocks, the atoms of space. And they are what form the large-scale structure. So now I'm going to sort of step my way outwards into larger and larger areas of, or volumes of the universe. And these are kind of hard to see. You certainly can't see the names of the different objects here. But this is just a graphical representation of the local galaxy group. We've called it the local galactic group. And it consists of two large galaxies. One is the Milky Way right here, and the other one is the Andromeda Galaxy that I just showed you. And they are separated by about 2.5 million light years. And I'll talk more about what a light year is in a minute, but it's a very, very large distance, and they're separated by a distance that's several thousands of times larger than their actual extent themselves. Surrounding them, as you can see, are many, many smaller structures, and these are what we call dwarf galaxies. And so this is the local group, and it's a set of galaxies which are clustered together, held together again by their own mutual gravity, in exactly the same way that the individual stars within each galaxy themselves are held together. So we're seeing what I want you to see from this is that we're starting to see this sort of hierarchical structure here of smaller clumps then forming together to form these larger matter over densities. Again, everything held together by gravity.
Can you explain the circular blue lines at the bottom?
Yeah, so these circular blue lines down here are really just coordinate systems. And so they're just showing you they're showing you if you were in the Earth somewhere in here and you were looking around in 360 degrees, this is supposed to be sort of a 360-degree cylinder around us. Does that make sense? Sort of?
Is it placed there by...
No, it's not there. Yeah, it's just placed there to show us sort of how these things are oriented in space, because it's a three-dimensional structure which we're seeing just projected into two dimensions. So it's supposed to be helping you sort of visualize the three dimensions. Similarly here, it actually does show up quite well on my screen, but it's a bit harder to see here. Here, we've zoomed out again. Again, this is the local galactic group in here now. So the entire region that I was showing you before is now in this region here. And we can see the larger supercluster, which happens to be called the Virgo supercluster, that we belong to. And so our galaxy is in here, and we're part of this larger cluster of larger supercluster of clusters of galaxies. And so again, we've moved up to another level in this hierarchical ordering of structure. So for example, over here, this is the Virgo cluster, which the group is named after. All of the little points in here that you see are individual galaxies like our own Milky Way. Yes, I'm sorry, I keep forgetting. So this Virgo cluster right here is the most massive galaxy within the Virgo supercluster, and each one of those dots that you see there is an individual massive galaxy, and there's thousands of them in there. And of course, each one of those is populated with billions of stars. And each one of those stars may have several planets as well. But again, another talk. But again, you see this clustering together. These galaxies themselves are held together by their own mutual gravity again. And then we can go to even larger scales. This is a perhaps kind of a confusing picture, so let me just explain for a minute what we're seeing here. I've blown things up again by about 1,000 times. And this is a real data map from a survey called the 2DF Galaxy Survey. And it was ongoing for a long time, and this particular image was published in 2007. We are in the center here. This is supposed to represent the Earth, but of course the Earth is around the Sun, which is inside the Milky Way. And what this galaxy survey has done is looked in two directions of the sky. And so that's what these two pie chart things here are. These are two viewing angles into the sky, and it mapped the distribution of galaxies in those two angles in the sky. And you now can't even see individual galaxies in this image. We've zoomed out so far that you can't see individual galaxies anymore. And they're just showing you the density patterns of galaxies within the universe. So, for example, this area here is a region of very low density, and this region here is called the Great Sloan Wall, is a region of very high density. Now, of course, the actual universe itself is an entire 360 degrees, but it's just completely impossible to map all of that out on these very large scales. So that's why we see these two beamed angles of the sky. We're now looking at a distance of about 2 billion light years here. And then if we go out again by about 100 times, this is what the universe looks like. This is actually a simulation. This is one of the, well, it is the biggest simulation of the universe. One of the ways we learn about large-scale structure in the universe is to actually simulate the universe in supercomputers, and I'll mention that again in a moment. And this is what the universe looks like in one of these simulations. We now have something that would look like that supercluster right in the middle here, this small area. But you can see the larger scale structure in the universe around it. What you can see, what I want you to see from this is, again, well, there's two things. The first thing is that things are actually starting to get a little more evenly distributed here, in the sense that if you just picked a random large area over here, it looks pretty much like this area over here. But there are, again, regions of high density, like this very, very massive supercluster here, and then regions of voids where there are no galaxies whatsoever. Again, this is really just a slice through the universe. The universe itself is, of course, three dimensions, but if we cut out a full box, you actually wouldn't be able to see any of this structure. So this is really just a small slice of the universe. And then the other thing I wanted to just draw your eye to, because I'm going to mention it again later, are these filaments. This is actually a really remarkable image. It looks a lot like a brain cell, if there are any biologists in the audience. So you have these nodes here, these neurons, these nodes, that are connected to each other through these great filaments. And this is how we understand the large-scale structure of the universe. So I'm showing you this in simulation because it's the easiest to see, but we can map this out, and that's what this is attempting to do with real data.
What's the scale of it?
This scale right up here, it says 125 megaparsecs. A megaparsec is about a million light years, slightly more than a million light years. So this is 100, so that box there, that line is 100 million light years across.
Over H?
Over H, yes. H is a factor of 1. Are you a cosmologist? No? Do you want to know what H is? H parameterizes the Hubble constant, which tells us how the universe is expanding.
And because for a long time we didn't know what the Hubble constant was, we had to include it in, and it affects these numbers of distance. And so we include it in things, these numbers, as a power of 1. So if the Hubble constant is 72, then h is 0.72. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, so this is what the universe looks like on large scales today. Extremely clumpy, regions of high density, regions of low density. This is what the universe looked like in the beginning. And this is real data, okay? This, and so this is going to take a little bit of explaining. So first of all, let me just say that I call this in the beginning. It's not exactly the beginning. It's 380,000 years after the Big Bang, which is pretty much the beginning. It's 0.003% of the universe's age today. This is a map taken by the COBE satellite many years ago. And it's a real map of the sky. And I've included this map of the world here because I'm going to be showing you a lot of maps that look like this over the next few slides. And it's kind of confusing if you haven't seen these before to understand what they are. But it's just the same. So when we look out into the sky, we see the universe projected on a three-dimensional sphere. And just like the globe, the Earth is a three-dimensional sphere. And if we want to actually look at that in two dimensions, we have to cut it and then flatten it out onto a map. And so when we do that with the world, this is what it looks like. And when we do that with the sky, this is what it looks like. Now, in this case, you can't actually see any of the sky, and I'll show you what a more recognizable sky would look like in a minute. But this is actually a picture of what we call the cosmic microwave background, which you may have heard of. It's responsible for a few Nobel Prizes. And it's what you see here is a temperature or density map of the sky of the universe as it was just after the Big Bang. And the point to take away from this is that this is an extremely smooth map. It's smooth to about 1 part in 10 to the 5, meaning that is how smooth the universe is in temperature or density after the Big Bang. So it's very bizarre because we have this extremely clumpy universe today, which started from a very, very smooth universe. So if we look, the color does have significance when you compare it to other maps. It has no significance in this when seen on its own. So the color is supposed to, the color represents the temperature. But in this particular map, it's all the same temperature, so I can make it any color I wanted. But you'll see in a minute that we'll see some additional colors that will pop up. So this is what the sky looks like at optical wavelengths. Again, this is what you would see with your eyes. That is the plane of our Milky Way galaxy here. So we're about two-thirds of the way out, and we're looking through it, so we see it as a disk in the sky. So it's an extremely, the universe today looks very different, right? When we look out into the sky today, this is what we see, and at 380,000 years after the Big Bang, this is what it looked like. And it's even worse than that, because we can't see most of the structure in the universe. Most of the structure in the universe looks something more like this. This is another very nice galaxy map where the colors of the different points, so all the different points on here are individual galaxies which are very, very distant from us. And all of the different colors correspond to different clumps of distances. So, for example, this is a very large wall, this purple wall. All of these purple galaxies are at the same distance from us. And so if you image even deeper into the universe, you, of course, see the structure. So you have to go from that very smooth map to something that looks like this. It's not completely terrible because if we actually zoom in on this very smooth map and look at how smooth it is on very, very small scales, and this is something, for example, the WMAP satellite has done, you see that there is actually some structure, some variation in that map. And so what you see here are the very, very small-scale temperature fluctuations, and in this case, the different colors correspond to hot and cold regions that correspond to these very, very small fluctuations in one part and 10 to the 5. So these are the seeds of structure that we start with after 380,000 years, and they actually come from bizarre physics, quantum physics, and inflationary physics. Again, a different lecture, but we do start with some seeds. It's not perfectly smooth. And the trick is that we have to go from that map, which is smooth to one part in 10 to the 5, to the map that we see in the sky today, the galaxy distribution. And it's actually extremely simple to do this. The only things that really matter in a large-scale structure sense are gravity and time. So we start the universe with these very, very small fluctuations after the Big Bang. They're regions of over-density, regions of higher mass in the universe, and so they have higher gravitational fields, and they pull in all of the matter around them. So with time, and given enough time, they can grow into very, very large structures like galaxies, and that's exactly what happens. So we give them 13.7 billion years and a strong gravitational constant, and you can produce the galaxies that we see, or at least the structures that we see around us today. Again, we can model this in supercomputers. This is, again, not something that I do myself, but this is just an example, in case you didn't know, of the supercomputer that McGill has access to. So I do actually have a graduate student running some simulations on this computer as we speak, but not of this particular map. So with very, very large supercomputers, we can attempt to reproduce the structure growth that we see. And so this idea of the growth of large-scale structure, turning this map of the smooth universe into the galaxy distribution map that we see today, is actually fairly well established. We pretty much understand this process, in part because the physics is quite simple. It's really just gravity and time. And so this has led to what we call the concordance model in cosmology. And so I just want to go through this really quickly. Now, I said this is really well understood, and it's kind of a paradox, at least in my mind. I call this, and many people do, the cosmological pie chart of ignorance. The way we understand how gravity and time take these initial density fluctuations in the universe and turn them into galaxies is by understanding what the universe is actually made out of. So what kind of matter is in the universe, what other forces are around. And that's where this concordance model comes in. What is the universe made of, and how does that drive structure formation? So you may have seen something like this before. Over here, we have the pie chart that shows what the universe is in total is made out of. There is a very, very large piece here. You probably can't see the number, but it's 70% on this plot. And this is something called dark energy. And this is, in fact, something that was just discovered maybe 10 years ago. And I'll come back to that in a second. The second biggest slice of the pie, 25%, is something called dark matter that has been known for about 100 years, known of for 100 years, but we still don't actually know what it is. And then over here, the remaining 5% is what we call, in the lingo, baryonic matter. And that's things like protons and neutrons. 4% of that 5% is essentially in free hydrogen and helium, just floating out in the universe. Not in stars, not in people, not in planets, just free hydrogen and helium in the universe. And roughly 1%, which is this entire pie chart here, is the stuff that you and I are made out of. You can even this is bizarre, 0.5% of that is, sorry, 0.5 of the universe, so 50% of this smaller portion, is stars. The next largest piece are these subatomic particles called neutrinos. And then there's heavy elements, which are 0.03% of the universe, and that's you and I. So we make up a very, very small percentage of the universe. And most of the universe, in fact, is this very bizarre, enigmatic stuff called dark matter and dark energy. The reason I'm telling you about that is because, in spite of the fact that we don't actually know much about dark matter and dark energy, they really dominate structure growth. And so that's why we understand how structure grows so well and can actually model it in these supercomputers. So I'll just very quickly give you the fastest definitions of dark matter and dark energy out there. So dark matter came along first, and its name actually makes sense. It's called dark matter because it is matter, just like you and I are matter, just like protons and electrons and neutrons are matter, but it's dark because it doesn't actually interact with light. So it's not just faint. It actually doesn't interact with light whatsoever. It can't absorb it. It can't reflect it. It can't emit it. Dark energy is something different. Dark energy is called dark energy really to mimic the name dark matter, and it's some sort of repulsive force in nature that we've just discovered, and it's actually causing the universe to accelerate in its expansion. I'm not going to talk about that, but these two things, dark matter and dark energy, really dominate the universe and dominate the structure growth. But they are actually quite simple. As I said, we understand dark matter because all it has is mass, and the only thing it does is exert a gravitational force. And dark energy, similarly, is something that seems to have kicked in just recently and just has this repulsive effect. And it doesn't really affect structure growth that much in the early universe. So we've been able to put together this extremely simple picture of how structure forms in the universe. And this is a very famous image put together by the people who study cosmic microwave background to show you what happens in the universe. And it's a schematic diagram, which is quite complicated, and I don't want to go through it all. But the point, so I'll just highlight some important points. The first one is that the universe starts way down here at essentially a point of infinitely small size. And at the beginning of time, it begins to expand, and that's what we call the Big Bang. It goes through a period of extremely rapid expansion that we call inflation, and we don't really understand that either. And after it comes out of inflation, it is extremely large. And so that's the universe that we have today. So you basically, in no time at all, expand the universe from something of infinitely small size to something that is as large as we see it today. And then it just keeps expanding slowly. This is where this snapshot of the early universe, the cosmic microwave background, comes from. And the stuff that I'm interested in happens in this regime here. So there's a period of time that we call the Dark Ages, where not much happens. And then during all of this time, the dark matter is pulling all of the structure together through gravity. So it's taking these very small fluctuations, pulling more matter into them, and beginning to form the stars and the galaxies and the superclusters that we see around us today, and then, of course, the planets and the people as well. And so I'm interested in this regime here, which takes us from the cosmic microwave background to the universe that we see today. And you can see the time scale here as well. It's about 14 billion years in total. So this beginning part was very, very rapid. We can put together this extremely simple picture of how the universe began because we understand how dark matter and dark energy behave, even if we don't really understand what they are. And importantly, for galaxy formation, it's led us to develop this context of structure formation that we call hierarchical structure formation. So that is the concordance model. That tells us how structure forms. And to understand this, I just want you to imagine that basically the two cartoon ways that you can form structure in the universe. So if you want to take a supercluster of galaxies, you can form it in two ways. You could either take a huge gas cloud that was the size of the supercluster and begin to collapse it down and then allow it to fragment into smaller groups, and those smaller clouds would then fragment and form smaller galaxies. And you would form it essentially from the top down. And there are objects like stars which form this way in the universe. The larger scale structure actually forms in a different way. It forms from the bottom up. And again, we know this because this is essentially what dark matter forces the universe to do. So in this case, small things form first, and then they merge and accrete together to form the largest things in the universe. So you have a very smooth universe in the beginning. It begins to condense into these very small pieces, which then merge together to form the larger pieces. And so that's what you see here in the zoom-in of the Millennium simulation. You can see all of these smaller pieces. And this is just a snapshot at a moment in time, but they're all streaming into this larger object along these filaments to build up the mass that we see around us today. So this is forming this hierarchical structure of galaxies, and then galaxy groups, and then galaxy clusters, and then superclusters in this progressive way. Now, this picture that you see here, which is a simulation, is actually a simulation of the dark matter. And I really like this image because it illustrates what's wrong with the universe or why it's interesting. Here we have an iceberg, which is another way of representing that pie chart of ignorance. We have below the water, below the surface of the water, the 25% of dark matter and 70% of dark energy that make up the universe. And these really dominate the growth of structure in the universe, as I said, and we actually understand that. So they're the bulk of the iceberg underneath the surface of the ocean. But what we can actually see, and what I study, and what you and I are made out of, and so what we should be interested in, is this 5% of visible matter up here. Right? And so when we look back at this image in the sky, we don't actually see this structure. We just see the very tip of this giant iceberg, which is the visible matter, which is the galaxies. And so that's what you see in this particular image. So this is a real image of a very famous, now famous, cluster called the Bullet Cluster. It's actually two merging clusters of galaxies. There's one here, and there's one here. What you see in blue is a representation of where the dark matter is, where the lower part of the iceberg in the universe is. And then, populating that, here are many, many, many galaxies. But they make up maybe 1% of the total mass. So they're very small, right? Because that's where the stars are and the planets. And so when you look at this image, you don't see the dark matter. You don't see the blue light there. We can measure it because we can see its gravitational effect on the galaxies. But when you just look at the image, you only see the galaxies. So these are all the tips of the iceberg here. This is called the Bullet Cluster, by the way, because this red stuff that you see here is actually extremely hot, billions of degrees gas, which is generally, usually, permeates the galaxies within a galaxy cluster, in between the galaxies. In this particular case, the Bullet Cluster is a merging cluster system. There's two galaxy clusters here, which have already passed through each other. The dark matter and the galaxies have stayed together, but this merger has ripped out all of the gas. And that's because the gas behaves differently than this other stuff. And so it's got this giant shock wave right here, which is why it's called the Bullet Cluster. And I'll show you another example of something like this in a minute. The point I want you to take away from this picture, other than the fact that the galaxies make this very small iceberg, is that you can see that things are starting to get actually kind of complicated. So I've already talked about the gas being ripped out of the cluster here. I've talked about this shock wave right here coming through. The problem that I have in understanding how galaxies form within the larger gravitational collapse of dark matter is that regular matter is actually quite complicated, unlike dark matter. We know what regular matter is, but the physics is extremely complicated. And that's because regular matter actually interacts with light. And so the degrees of freedom in the physics that can happen are much greater. It can do things like cool, it can absorb light, it can radiate light, it can turn into stars through this cooling process, and those stars can then go supernova and inject energy back into the galaxy that they live in. We have supermassive black holes forming in galaxies, shockwaves, as I've already talked about, outflows from galaxies, shockwaves coming out of the galaxies, and supergalactic winds. All kinds of extremely complicated physics can happen all just through the interaction between light and matter. And we don't get that with dark matter. And so what we actually have happening in structure formation is that we form what we call a dark matter halo around a galaxy. So this is the collapsing structure. And it just forms this nice, big, massive sphere. And then all of this crazy physics happens right in its core, where the tiny little galaxy lives. So inside this one particular galaxy, so you have this huge dark matter halo and then a tiny galaxy in the middle. And inside this galaxy, you have starbursts going on, supernova explosions, a supermassive black hole, which is accreting material and probably launching beamed jets back into the surrounding galaxy. There might be gas which is falling into the galaxy and inducing more star formation. It's extremely, extremely complicated. It's almost like biology. Coupled with that is the fact that the universe itself is actually very old, as I've already stated. So the universe itself is almost 14 billion years old. So this very complicated physics of changing galaxies, of galaxies collapsing and then evolving to form the structures that we see around us today, are happening a long time ago. And so it's not like you can just look next door at the Andromeda Galaxy and see it growing, see it forming, see it evolving. So how can we actually study this process? Do we have to be astrophysical archaeologists where we look for fossil evidence, for example? How do we actually move forward in this very complicated physical regime? So it turns out that there's actually a very nice coincidence in the universe, which makes studying it extremely easy. And that is the fact that light takes a certain amount of time to travel from one place to another. So you probably all know that light has a speed, the speed of light associated with it, and nothing can move faster than the speed of light in a vacuum, not even light. So light takes a certain amount of time to travel from one point to another. To put this in context, I've shown you three different objects here. So when we look up at the sun, this is a picture of our sun here. The light which is being emitted by the sun right now from its surface will take 8 minutes to get to us here on Earth. And so what I like to tell my students is that if the sun suddenly disappeared, exploded, or imploded, we would have 8 minutes of blissful ignorance before we actually realized that the sun was gone. Another way of looking at this is that the light that we see from the sun today, the sunlight that's just fading outside right now, left the sun 8 minutes ago. And so we see things because our eyes are detecting that light. So we're detecting old light. And in the case of the sun, it's only 8 minutes old, so it's not very old. But if you look at the Andromeda Galaxy, which is our nearest neighbor, it takes light 2.5 million years to travel from the Andromeda Galaxy. So we're actually seeing substantially older light there. And if you think about what that means, light left the Andromeda Galaxy 2.5 million years ago, traveled through space, and is just reaching us now. And so when we look at this picture, that is what the Andromeda Galaxy looked like 2.5 million years ago, not today. So if there are aliens in the Andromeda Galaxy with very powerful telescopes looking back at us, they will not see us sitting in this room. They will see what lived on Earth almost 3 million years ago, which I think was Lucy, if I remember right. Yeah. So that illustrates this really powerful fact that you're really seeing back in time when you detect light. So if you have a powerful enough telescope, you can literally see back in time. So people, aliens in the Andromeda Galaxy, can explore human evolution. The only problem is that they have to wait another 2 million years to see what Lucy actually evolved into. If we take this to the extreme, which is what I do for a living, we can take the very, very distant galaxies in the universe, which are 10 billion light years away. And we see them as they existed 10 billion years ago. And so now we're starting to probe back in time to a time slightly, just slightly after the Big Bang. And this is the time, as I'll talk about in a minute, where most of the action in galaxy formation is happening. So we don't have to use fossils. We can use this time travel technique to literally look back in time, just look as deep into the universe as we can go, see the most distant galaxies that we can see, and we can get a snapshot of what they looked like at very early times. Now, we can't watch any particular galaxy evolve forward in time, but we can sort of step our way through the universe and look at galaxies that are progressively further and further away and try and put together a time scale and an evolutionary sequence in that way. The tricky part is measuring the distance to the galaxy. So, of course, to know how old your light is, you need to know how far away the galaxy is. And we do that using a technique called redshift. And I'm not going to talk too much about this because it's actually quite a complicated idea. But essentially, if you haven't heard about this before, all chemical elements in the universe, and these chemical elements make up galaxies, so we're talking about things like hydrogen or oxygen or helium, have a footprint in the light spectrum of that galaxy. So we can observe a galaxy, we can disperse its light into all the colors of the rainbow, and we can look for these barcodes within the spectra, within the rainbow. And hydrogen has a very specific barcode, and sodium has a very specific barcode, in the sense that they always appear at the same wavelength of light or the same color of light. And so what happens, this very neat thing happens with the expansion of the universe. So as the universe is expanding, it's actually stretching light to longer and longer wavelengths. So this is kind of hard to picture, but if you picture light as a wave, and I haven't talked much about light, but because in the interest of time, but light can be like a wave. And if you imagine the universe as a balloon, this is a famous analogy, we can draw a wave on a balloon at early times down here when the balloon is quite small, and then we blow up the balloon and we mimic the growth of the universe in that way. And what's going to happen on the surface of the balloon is that wavelength is going to stretch. And so it gets longer. And in physics, that means it's actually being stretched towards redder wavelengths of light. So that's why we call it a redshift. So you can actually see this. So these are chemical footprints or barcodes in the spectrum of our own sun up here. And then this is from stars in a very distant galaxy 1 billion light years away. And what you can see has happened is that the patterns of the lines are the same. So there's a doublet line here and one here, and it's down here, the doublet and one, but it's shifted towards the red light. And so we can look for these patterns. And the point is the following. When that galaxy emitted the light that we see in the spectrum, the universe was smaller because the universe has been expanding. As the light traveled over a billion years from that galaxy to us, the universe expanded and pulled that light along with it. And by the time it reached us, it had shifted to look like this. And we can measure that shift. And the longer the light takes to travel, the more it shifted and the further away that object is. So just by looking at these very simple barcodes, we can figure out how far away galaxies are. And so in doing that, and this is what I do, we go out and we look for galaxies which are extremely far away, and we measure their properties, and we try and connect galaxy evolution through the universe. And it's a very complicated process, but we've learned a lot over the last, so I've been at this maybe 10 years, and we've learned a lot over the last few decades, and a lot of it is encapsulated in this rather complicated plot. This is the most complicated plot I'm going to show you, and I'm actually going to only show it to you for a couple of moments, and then I'll move on. This is a very famous plot in my area. What it's showing you here, I've written it over here, is the volume average rate of star formation. Okay? in the universe. And so that means if you take a large section of the universe and all of the galaxies within it, and you average how rapidly those galaxies are forming their stars, you get some number. This axis here is redshift, and up here we've shown it in time. So going back in time along this direction. So this is today right here at t equals 13.7. And as we go back in time, we can look at these galaxies, which are very far away, and we can measure how fast they're forming their stars. So forming stars is a really basic evolutionary activity for galaxies, right? They have to start from a big cloud of gas, and they have to turn their gas into stars, right? It's just like developing thumbs or learning to walk upright. For human beings, it's a fundamental part of becoming modern galaxies. As we look back in time, the universe today is not actually forming stars very much. We're pretty much done. And as you look back in time, you start to see that stars are forming at higher and higher rates. And so just take a look at it doesn't matter what these numbers are, except for the fact that this is a logarithmic plot. So you're going up more than an order of magnitude here, so a factor of 10. So by the time you get to about 8, when the universe was 8 billion years old, so about half of its present day age, it is forming a lot of stars. And so the only point I really want you guys to take away from this is the following, that this is really where the action starts to happen in the universe. So someone like me has to push their observations until we hit this peak in star formation. And by the way, this is also where black holes turn on as well. So there's supermassive black holes which are growing in this time regime as well. And then you want to look and see what's happening with galaxies from about, 4 billion years all the way to time equals zero. So the first 4 billion years of the universe is where things are really happening. And so I'm just going to be finishing off with this, because this is where I do a lot of my own work in this regime here. So I just want to give you a flavor for the kinds of stuff that go on at McGill at this time in the universe. And so I've just highlighted a few different projects that we have going on to understand how galaxies form and to highlight a few of the things that are important in galaxy evolution. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is this beautiful image here. This is not an image that I've taken myself. This is one of the Hubble Space Telescope legacy images, but it nicely illustrates the idea that as we go back in time, because of this merging and accretion process that's involved in hierarchical structure formation, what we actually see happening in the universe is an increase in the mergers between objects, right? So at the beginning of the universe, we form small things, and then we have to merge them together to form large things. So as we push back in time, we start to see that merging process happen. And it's, as you can see, extremely beautiful. These are images of two galaxies in each case which are smashing together to form a larger galaxy. And these are images where they've been caught in action. And so you can see all sorts of crazy things happening. They're all at different stages. Let's see if I can go back. They're all at different stages of this, what I call a train wreck. But eventually what they're going to form is a very massive galaxy, which is twice the mass that it of either one of these individual galaxies. And as some of you may have heard, our own galaxy is on a collision course with Andromeda and will someday look like this. But many billions of years in the future. So it's not, and even then it probably won't affect the sun at all. It'll change our position, but it won't destroy us. So we can actually study this process of galaxies merging together to form larger galaxies by looking for these merging galaxies deep into the universe. Another thing that we do is to understand this accretion process. This is a nice little image that my postdoc, Jim Geach, put together to illustrate this idea. This is a distant galaxy cluster. So remember, this bunch of objects that you see right here are thousands of galaxies, like our own Milky Way, which are held together by their own mutual gravity. And during this growth process, galaxies literally fall in from the outskirts. So there's this little galaxy right here that we've identified, that Jim has identified, that is infalling into this cluster. And it has to cover, this says 3 megaparsecs, so this is about 3 million light years. It will take probably 1 billion years to do that. But in the process, it's going to pass through all of these other galaxies, all of the hot gas that I showed you in that cluster, and it's going to be a very violent process for this one poor individual galaxy. And by the time it reaches the center here, it's going to look like a very different object. And so at McGill, we actually try and study how galaxies evolve, how they change as they fall into clusters. So this is just a snapshot of 9 different clusters that we study at very, very large distances. So again, they're right at the moment in the universe where galaxies are evolving and this growth process is so important. This is a neat little picture here, which illustrates something else that we can use, which is something called gravitational lensing. So gravitational lensing is an effect from general relativity, which essentially provides us with a second telescope. Again, we have a massive galaxy cluster here. These are all individual galaxies, and it's full of dark matter. And that dark matter, through general relativity, is actually magnifying and focusing the galaxies behind it. And so it creates these beautiful gravitational images, these arcs that you can use to essentially study galaxies that you wouldn't normally be able to see. The cluster behaves like a giant magnifying glass in front of background galaxies. So it allows you to see even deeper into the universe. We also study, I'll just go through this really quickly, supermassive black holes at the centers of galaxies. This is an artist's rendition of what something that, like that would look like. Our own galaxy, the Milky Way, has a supermassive black hole in it, inside of it, although it's actually quite quiet. Right now it's not eating anything. But this is a picture of a real galaxy with a very active supermassive black hole in the center. This is the galaxy disk here, and then there are these huge jets of material which are being spewed out from the center. We know that the growth of the supermassive black hole is actually very tightly tied to the overall growth of mass in the galaxy. There's something weird that goes on between the supermassive black hole in the center of the galaxy and the growth of all the structure around it. And then I just want to finish with this image that I started with in a couple of very quick videos that we put together. This is a new project that we've just started. We've put together an acronym that we call SCALES, which stands for the Supercluster Assembly Legacy Survey. What we have found, and we've known this is within a larger team of international collaborators that I work with, we've discovered a triple merging system right at that peak of the star formation, average star formation rate density. And so what you see here, and I'll explain what this is now, is an optical image. So all of these little dots that you see are individual galaxies. These blue hazes are X-ray emission, showing you the X-ray emission from the hot gas within 3 massive cluster cores. And these 3 clusters have been caught in the process of coming together to form one of the most massive clusters around us today. So I call this the ultimate cosmic train wreck. This is essentially, there's only about 5 of these objects known in the universe, and this one is one of a kind in terms of the mass of the object that it's going to produce. It's going to produce the most massive object. So it's like the Bullitt cluster, but even better, because now we have 3 objects coming together. This circle here highlights this really neat thing that we just found recently with the Herschel Space Telescope. These blurry light images that you see here are actually infrared emission or submillimeter emission. which is coming from huge bursts of star formation. And we've discovered a filament which is running between these two galaxies. So again, you have to kind of picture this in three dimensions, and I'll show you a video in a second of this filament arcing sort of out of the screen between these two galaxies. And so this is probably a lot like the filaments that I was showing you in those simulations. And for whatever reason, we don't really understand why yet, the galaxies along this filament are undergoing huge bursts of star formation. We think what we're seeing is something like this large cluster, which is called the Coma Cluster, caught in the process of formation 10 billion years ago. So I'm going to skip over this, and I'll just show you this. This is a nice little movie that we put together. Again, we're only seeing this as a snapshot, right? We can't actually see the galaxy clusters merging together. But this is a little movie of the structure that we see. Again, you see the three X-ray cores here, which show you the densest regions of the clusters, and then all of these dots correspond to galaxies that we've identified around them. And it's kind of hard to pick this out unless you know what you're looking for, but there's actually a filament, that filamentary structure running between, let's see if I can, find it, between this galaxy and that one, the arc of the structure that I showed you before. I think you can see it when it comes around this side. Nope. And then I'll just finish with this, which is another movie that my postdoc, Jim Geach, has put together to illustrate, not in real time, but in dynamic time, how something like this actually forms. What you're seeing right here is not stars and not dark matter, but actually the gas within that galaxy cluster, merging galaxy cluster, coming together. So we have a close-up of a single galaxy cluster core here. So if I just go backwards, so we're going to be looking, zooming in on essentially one of these objects and watching a sped up movie of several billions of years as all of the gas infalls. And then what's going to be happening on top of that, which we don't see, are starbursts and feeding supermassive black holes. But the thing that I want you to take away from this idea of the smaller pieces coming together to form this larger object. And you can see these filamentary structures where stars are forming as they come into the center of the cluster. So we've caught this in action about 10 billion years ago. And we're now trying to study essentially how it affects and how it drives evolution within its galaxies. So I'll leave you with this beautiful image showing you galaxies or the gas in formation in the center of this very beautiful, massive structure that we've discovered. Thank you very much.
OK, thank you very much, Trace. I don't know where to begin to think about this. Questions, please. OK, right at the back. Come on.
Professor, here's something about the speed of light. I seem to recall reading something where physicists have either discovered or theorized or discovered the probability pattern in such that an object could go faster than the speed of light, and they called it a tachyon. Have you heard about that?
This is a question for my particle physics colleagues. Mark, can you answer? No, I don't know very much about it at all. What can I say? For my own purposes, I'm interested in the light itself, not particles that would actually travel faster than the speed of light, because it's the light which transmits the information. And it's that finite speed of light that actually allows me to study the galaxies. So understanding the ideas behind causation and things traveling faster than the speed of light is a different science. And it's certainly a very exciting one. And if we could if you could transmit information faster than the speed of light, it would be very interesting for everyone in the universe.
Okay, yes?
Well, thank you for your presentation. I have a small question and perhaps a larger one. The smaller one is about dark matter.
Okay.
You said that it doesn't interact with light, but by virtue of it, its mass, it will bend light. It will deform
So the gravitational lensing.
Yeah. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me clarify, though. So the question is, I think, how if I so what I said was that dark matter doesn't interact with light, but then I showed you this image of dark matter actually bending the light, and how does this make sense? So when I say interact with light, I'm really talking about the particles of dark matter absorbing or scattering or emitting the light in the same way that atoms do around us. What's happening with the gravitational lensing is something much larger. The actual presence of the dark matter, the mass in the universe, is warping space around that matter. And light is traveling through that space, and because the space is warped, instead of going in a straight line, it curves. So the light itself is not interacting in any way with the dark matter. The dark matter has warped the universe, and the light has to travel through the universe.
Perhaps the larger question, okay. I'm trying to wrap my head around the mathematical description of clumpiness and of structure. I can imagine some sort of integral where the starting state of the universe is a kind of, has a value, this integral would have a value of 1, where it's completely homogeneous.
Mm-hmm.
Is it an open-ended? Is clumpiness, this clumpiness factor, is it have any bounds?
Yes. So the clumpiness is scale dependent. And if you go to large enough scales, the universe again becomes homogeneous. And so that's what I was attempting to illustrate with that one. You can't see it in this one particular image because it's not big enough. Right here. But if you were to zoom out even more, the universe becomes extremely homogeneous in the sense that if you plop down a sphere in any one particular spot, you will have the same amount of mass as another particular spot. So on large scales, the universe is not clumpy. And as you zoom in, it gets clumpier and clumpier, and that's this hierarchical structure. And so there is a scale which is approximately this, about 100 give or take megaparsecs, which is several million light years, where we see the largest structures. And then once we go larger than that, it does start to look pretty smooth. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Okay.
Good question at the back.
Those three galaxies, superclusters that are emerging, they're rotating around each other. Seems to me that they'd have to get rid of an awful lot of angular momentum in order to merge. So what would carry that away?
So they're not actually necessarily rotating around each other. In the movie, I was attempting to turn it so you could see it from different angles. But you are right. There's always angular momentum that has to be removed somehow during these processes. And that's one of the reasons why dark matter gets stuck at these very large scales, and it forms these very large spheres around galaxies like our own Milky Way, because it can't get rid of energy and things like angular momentum, whereas the regular matter can. And so it can dissipate angular momentum through a number of different complicated means of exchanging energy. But at some time, for example, our own Milky Way is a disk because angular momentum had to be conserved. And so it started out as a large sphere with some angular momentum, and as it collapsed, in order to conserve that angular momentum, it had to collapse into a disk. And so it never actually got rid of it. And so sometimes you can't get rid of it, and it suppresses the collapse in certain directions.
Okay, question here on the left.
You mentioned colliding galaxies, but I understand those galaxies are made up of a lot of void.
Mm-hmm.
So when they collide, Would they just go through one another unharmed, or would they, do they tend to go faster as they come closer, and eventually with a bungee effect, they would like bounce back? Or?
Yeah, so yes to everything you just said. So I'm trying to highlight two things here. Let me just... So you are completely correct that most of the galaxies themselves are empty space. And so the stars themselves are passing right through each other. excuse me. The gas, on the other hand, does interact. And you can get these shock waves in the gas. And this is in part because the gas can get rid of its angular momentum and stream into the center and feed a black hole or compress and form stars. But what will generally happen, and this is something we don't really understand, and one of the things we try and understand, is that these galaxies will come in towards each other, and they have some velocity. They will pass through each other. The gas will probably interact, but then the momentum will carry the galaxies through. So in some of these cases, the galaxies may be coming out the other side. But there is gravity there, and the gravity will pull them back again, like you said, like a bungee. And so they might go through, we don't know, 2, 3, 10 passes before they eventually get stuck together. And each pass does something very dynamic and violent as they pass through each other through the gas interactions.
And we don't think stars collide that much?
We don't think so, no. And you can see that, so the other thing I was going to show you was this, the merging clusters, which is the same physics, just on a larger scale. Substitute galaxies for the stars now. And that's what you see happening here. These galaxy, two galaxy clusters, one here and one here, have passed through each other, and the galaxies and the dark matter have just come out the other side. But the gas has been shocked and stripped out of the galaxy clusters. And so it's actually in between these two galaxy clusters. Eventually, the galaxy clusters will turn around and come back to where the gas is, and the whole thing will eventually come together. But it will take a couple passes, probably.
So do we think we've observed already galaxies that have gone through several times?
Definitely. Yes. Yeah, so that's another... So people try and take... Sorry, I keep flipping back and forth here. People who really study this in detail, who really want to understand the merging galaxies themselves, attempt to put together sequences of these mergers where you see them at different stages, and you try and identify ones that have gone through a pass once and twice and... et cetera, and try and sort of put together that puzzle.
Right here and then behind
you. Yeah, just my understanding is that we're in an expanding universe.
That's right.
And is there an assumption to be made that the merging of the galaxies is a measurement of something that occurred further back in time, and that today, if there were to, there would be fewer and fewer that would be measured today, let's say.
Exactly.
If they were actually occurring at the moment.
So
these are far away.
These are far away. And so that plot that I, well, this plot, where we see the increase in action to earlier times, part of that, we think, is the fact that galaxies are just closer together. And so they undergo things like merging more often because the universe was smaller. You know, it's like in this room, if there's a lot of people, we bump into each other a lot. Whereas if the room gets bigger, we have more space. And so it is definitely something that we see increase. We still see mergers happen in the local universe, but it's much less.
Is there an understanding whether there will be a collapsing effect?
In terms of the entire universe?
Like a spring?
Yeah, no, well, so this is what dark energy seems to be telling us. Dark energy, which is newly discovered in the last 10 years, appears to be telling us that there won't be a turnaround and a collapse. Because it has this repulsive nature. It's trying to blow everything apart. So people discovered dark energy because they actually were looking for this recollapse, evidence of the recollapse, of the future recollapse. And instead, they found dark energy.
Diane?
How long does this process take from, say, first contact of the two galaxies through the, you know, bungee effect when you settle down? Rough estimate.
I'm guessing about 1 billion years.
Okay.
Yeah. Or slightly less than that.
Okay, yeah. That
it's very long. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it depends. Yeah.
Mark?
Do stars form first or galaxies form first?
Good question. Or black holes.
Or black holes.
A galaxy is by definition a collection of stars. So it has to form, so the stars form first. But there is some thought that those stars form clustered together. So they are forming galaxy-like objects, although very low-mass ones. But then there's this other idea that in the very early universe, because of a variety of effects, the first stars to form are extremely massive. They're 200 times the mass of our own sun. They're very, very massive. And they immediately go supernova and collapse and form black holes. So you can, there is a line of investigation which says that some of the very first objects, the primordial objects, will be massive black holes and may still be around today.
Leon?
So when people do simulations, what you're saying is that the dark energy is very important, but how do they come up with the initial conditions for the spatial distribution of the dark energy?
So the initial conditions are set by the cosmic microwave background. Which gives us the initial density fluctuations. Now, in the dark matter. And the dark energy is assumed to be uniform everywhere. So it's the matter which has the structure. And so the early simulations didn't account for dark energy whatsoever, and so they actually got the wrong answer. So you don't have to assume a distribution of the dark energy, only the matter. And the matter you actually see from those initial seeds. So you can't set the initial conditions at the Big Bang. The time that you can only start from is that last snapshot that you have of the universe, which we see in the cosmic microwave background. And you go from there to what we see today. How we get to that point is a matter of theory. You can't simulate that based on initial conditions. Does that answer your question?
I'm sure.
I have a question. You said dark matter, dark energy just discovered 10 years ago. I mean, are there physical laws there we've not discovered yet?
Are there physical laws that we haven't discovered yet?
Is there some new physics? Really, some new physics?
I don't know. Maybe screw me. So, yes, I mean, well, dark energy, it's very complicated, of course. Even Einstein saw hints of something like dark energy in his work, which he threw away, and now it's come back. The nature of dark energy and the idea, some of the ideas of what dark energy could be were also already in place in particle physics. So the vacuum energy, essentially, of the universe, base level. So it didn't come out of absolutely nowhere, and there were some basic ideas there that one could build on. But certainly it wasn't what people expected to find at all, and it's just blown up an entirely new area of astrophysics. Okay. So I think there's lots to discover.
Okay, are there any other questions? Okay,
can I ask
one more, yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You start with that little tiny whatever, and you get to all of that. Where did the mass come from?
That's not a beginner question at all. That's one of the most fundamental questions in physics. And I will tell you two things that maybe can at least forward your research. We think that there was a period of what we call reheating, where the universe was essentially kind of populated with mass after that inflationary period. It did come from somewhere. It came from the energy in the universe, essentially. And then this is one of the questions that I'm sure you've heard of, the Higgs boson and what they're doing at the Large Hadron Collider, trying to understand the nature of mass and where it all came from and why it's there.
I don't have a lot of time.
Okay, I think we will bring the formal questions to a close here. But before we do, let's thank our speaker once again.
Thank you.
And we'll you all again in 1 month's time on Nature or Nurture.